Stop. Will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
All right, here we are. I'm here live. You're here live. We're all together. It's Saturday, May 10th. You're on the Hour of Truth. This is presented to you by Missouri Grassroots Radio, a function of Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We're in the Sovereignty Series now. I'm Dave. I have it on good advice that our friend Keith Carmichael will be joining us tonight. We'll recap where we're at in Missouri with Convention of the States and where we go from here. There's some action needed there. We're into the last week now of the legislative session. The last week starts Monday, and they go all the way through Friday. You heard Mike Moon kind of give a detail of how the last week goes. Now, we'll be following next week what happened in the last week with interest, because in the last week of the legislative session, things get really, really hectic. Bills that just couldn't make it to the floor, bills that came to the floor and died there, or that died in committee, people start throwing them all together, hodgepodge, on as amendments to other bills. So what you're going to get is a bill introduced to, to restrict the height that birdhouses can be off the ground in someone's front yard. And attached to that, you're going to have a bill to limit dumping toxic waste in the James River, and a bill, you're going to have an amendment attached to that, giving a whole bunch of money to some insane asylum in the northwest part of the state, and you're going to have attached to that an amendment this and an amendment that, and then you're going to have another function of government amendment that says anyone can sit in their front yard naked, Tom. So that's going to get pretty exciting and pretty convoluted, and we'll try a couple of weeks from now. I said next week, but we won't be talking about that next week. Next week, on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and the week following that, on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. That's right, we're going to do a special Thursday night show both weeks, 2 hours, 7 to 9 on Thursday, 7 to 9 on Friday, our usual night, 7 to 9 on Saturday, our usual night, 2 weeks in a row. That's 6 hours a week. That's 12 hours total. We are going to mount the million-dollar message. Now, the million-dollar message is actually going to raise $2 million, hopefully. What we want to try to achieve is we want 100,000 grassroots Missourians. That's 100,000. We're going to be reaching out to get 100,000 people to pledge to send $10. That's $1 million. We're going to try to get pledges from 100,000 people all across the state to send $10, only $10, to Mike Moon for his reelection campaign. And we're going to get the same 100,000 people to send another $10 to the campaign of Jeff Middlehauser. You might not know Jeff Middlehauser. You will before the end of next week. He is the prosecuting attorney in Pettis County up there in Sedalia, and he is in a primary heat against Stanley Cox, the guy, the representative who chairs the Judiciary Committee and who made the single-handed decision to not forward the articles of impeachment to the House for a vote. We'll be talking more about that later. I believe I see our good buddy Keith. Is that you, Keith?
How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you, Keith?
I'm doing great. I just didn't get a chance to be with you last night, but I spent some time the last few minutes listening to last night's program, so I'm trying to kind of catch up.
Yeah.
And what a great program you had last night.
We did. We did. We had Mike on, and he was on for quite a while. We always thank him and appreciate him coming along. He actually took some time out from his family time to share with the people of Missouri what's really going on in the House. What a convoluted thing this is as we get down to the waning moments of the legislative session. And one of the late term victims, not a victim, not a death blow yet, but one of the late term victims was the Convention of the States legislation, wasn't it, Keith?
Well, like you said, I think not yet. I said, but they're really in the time allotted. You know, I'm new at this, but I could see in the faces of people who are veterans at this when there was a time that we had that scheduled, and we had a speaker who couldn't come in, and we actually asked him to move it back a week, and that wasn't a problem, didn't seem to be, but by the time we did that, and then it set in the General Laws Committee after it was voted on the first time, you know, just sat there for 3 weeks, nothing was done, made us kind of wonder whether, you know, the folks were sincere in what they were telling us and their support and what they would do. But then went through kind of a situation where I'll call it a drafting, and maybe you and Mike talked about it already. I didn't get into that, didn't hear you get into that with HCR 41, but I could see as it came in there that the title, you know, I didn't like the title that was on there personally, but, you know, when I'm new at this and it was already done, so I just kind of sat back and kept my mouth quiet. But I don't know that with the resolution, the title was that important. I don't know that it couldn't have been changed on the floor. There's people who know a lot more about it than I do, and certainly I was disappointed that you just sat there for a long period of time and went back from the Rules Committee to General Laws, and they didn't waste a lot of time that time, moved it over. But you might see on your Facebook page on Missouri Grassroots Coalition, I have, I think, three posts on there, and one of them is I'm asking people to go ahead and contact, you know, Deal's office. I think, John, you know, what I'd like to do is be able to get this issue at least some exposure in the House. We're, you know, I think it's at this point unrealistic for, you know, if we were in some other state and we had a lot of clout, they can move this if they wanted to. If there was somebody who wanted to get this done and they sat down with the right people in a few minutes, they said, well, let's get this to the floor, let's get it passed. We have someone who's willing to handle it in the Senate. You know, they have time to do it if they wanted to.
Right.
But they're not probably got it as a priority, and I understand, you know, when they're with the things that they were doing this week and the week before, this is an issue that's important to me, but I understand where they're coming from when it comes to overriding the governor's veto of a tax cut. I understand that completely, and there's a lot of other things that they had on their plate. So I'm not going to be big on fault finding on this issue, but I would like, you know, I posted it on there, if we contact John Deal's office and have him get this to the floor if possible, so we can get some exposure to this issue. And more than that, if we get an opportunity for a vote, then we see where everyone stands on this issue and where we need to go to work and where we need to, you know, what we need to do. That will help us if we could get it to the floor and get, you know, find out, you know, where the strengths are and where the support is and where it's not.
Absolutely. I add to that. I'm very much in support of this myself. Personally, I think Missouri needs this. I think the United States of America needs this. I think the whole state sovereignty issue needs this. I urge people listening to not only ask him to get it to the floor, but ask him, come right out and ask him to get it to a vote. I agree with you, Keith. It's important to see where it stands, how it fares, and I certainly didn't mean when I said that it was a victim, that it was going to be a fatal wound. But it was certainly a victim with the whole game. And Mike or Keith, this is something Mike and I talked about last night. I still sit here at the end of every session, and I knew I would be sitting here tonight back in January when the session started, shaking my head at the same old thing, how these bills that get introduced in the first and second week always end up dragging out to where everything comes to a head in the last week, and good bills end up dead because priorities, these folks have, Mike said last night, they dismiss a day for a golf tournament. And then all of a sudden here in the last 2-3 weeks of the session, everything that was introduced back in the first week, second week of the session starts boiling up to the top in a last-minute flurry of amending and activity.
No question. And when we sat down with some of the sponsors, so there was one or two that said, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I could see the disappointment in a couple of the bill's main sponsors, not Mike, but there's a couple other real supportive sponsors that have a lot of experience under their belt. And when it moved past the break, they knew that wasn't good,
Right.
As we got drawn out at that point. And that's just experience speaking. I mean, that's just what it was. It's their experience just telling them that, this doesn't give us any advantage and it probably puts us where we don't want to be. So
what do we do now? I mean, let's just pretend that the week passes and that, say, it comes to the floor and it either does or doesn't come to a vote, but it's not going to make it to the Senate in time for committee hearings and committee votes and then floor votes.
Right.
What's the plan?
Well, we're going to continue with this. Not everybody, we haven't really discussed this too much, but we're going to try to keep both of our oars in the water. And the old adage is, if you only have one oar in the water, you just kind of go in a circle, or you don't go
right
anywhere. One of those, of course, is I think, I want to give a lot of credit to one individual or two. More than that, but especially Mike Moon has worked hard on this, but we wouldn't be where we are today. We wouldn't have gotten this far. We wouldn't have gotten off first base or off, we wouldn't have got started if it wasn't for John Putnam, and he has some contacts there and people that he knows. We were able to, I think we went a long ways. If you look back and see when we started and what we started with, and the membership on website, conventionofstates.com, if you go to that this evening and have a look at the information there, I'd suggest everyone go on and join so you can keep up with what is happening with the Convention of States issue. But that membership in Missouri has been doubling every month. So
wow.
We had a few folks when we started, and we have more now, but we have to keep both oars in the water. I guess I better explain what I mean by that. One is the grassroots effort in every district, especially our goal is to have, a grassroots organization in 3/4 of the districts, at least, in Missouri. So when we get, because even if we get to this point where we want to be and this passes in Missouri and we get the number of states, we're serious about that and getting the number of states required. We know the last ones are going to be difficult, and we're going to be helping, these state organizations are going to be helping each other to some degree.
Right.
But the grassroots needed to not only call a convention, but to ratify. Ratification is the key. I mean, you can, folks are scared of a convention. basically all that is an interstate study committee, and they have power to make recommendations. And those recommendations are absolutely worthless until they're ratified by the 38th state. And so the ratification is going to be this is a hard process, and it's long.
It
I
is.
Wish it was quicker. I wish it was easier, but it's complicated, and it's hard. But we wouldn't have started down this road if we didn't think it was worth it.
No, I agree, and I've agreed with you from the very beginning. The real fight comes once this is done. I mean, when you get the convention of the states together, when you get the what you call a study group together, when you get the proposals out, then the hard work begins. A lot more time, a lot more words, a lot more philosophical discussion, and a lot more bitter disagreement went into the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers during the debate about ratification of the Constitution than ever went in to those meetings in Philadelphia.
Sure. And it's unfortunate that conservatives can't get together. I mean, I think we're making progress. There's no question that there's two organizations who have talked about the Convention of States derogatory, have been misled and poor information for three decades. And the leadership's not going to change. But the information that's out there, and I call it, it's new scholarship since 2010. I mean, it's new scholarship, has basically turned the old scholarship into fiction, which is what it was. And members of those organizations who are taking the time to do their homework are coming to, they're coming over. That's why this organization's growing. It's doubling every month in Missouri alone, because there are people who care enough about their children's future to sit down and watch a video and read a document and say, I've been told this my whole life, and I see it's nonsense. It's fiction. It's disappointing that we have to train, we have to convince our neighbors who believe and work with us every day to fight on issues we believe the same things on 99% of the issues out there. But this one, the well was poisoned, and there's some folks who drank pretty deeply, and they're not coming back. But the general membership is coming over to the common sense. As you said, this I don't want to diminish this, what a convention is, but it really is, for legislators especially, it could simply be called an interstate study committee, because that's in their lingo, in their world, that's all it is, a task force. Now, they have power to make recommendations, and this committee has absolutely no power out of that to make recommendations or proposals, or we call proposed amendments to the Constitution. There's no power in there, and it just baffles me that once you understand this, people still are so afraid.
Absolutely.
It's disappointing that we have to fight among ourselves before we can go out there and actually get the main battle underway.
And the way to think about this, folks, is this convention, this committee of the states, this cooperative, has exactly the same, no more and no less power than the representatives in Washington, D.C., when it comes to amending the Constitution. There's a reason why the Congress can't just write an amendment to the Constitution. And this committee is exactly the same way. They have identical powers, the difference being, of course, that the Convention of the States, hopefully, as a cooperative of the states, will do some of the things that we need to do to take power away from Washington, D.C., and the folks in Washington, D.C., of course, will not. But the power to do so is exactly the same in both bodies.
Exactly, and the ratification procedure process is the same. I mean, when you drop down past the paragraph, then it talks about ratification. It doesn't distinguish whether that was proposed by Congress or a convention of states. The ratification process it is what it is, regardless of how that amendment is proposed, as long as it's proposed by one of those two.
And Keith, to restate something that I've stated to you here several times and in private conversation, we want to do whatever we can do here to keep that that left oar moving, to keep that grassroots boiling, to keep things moving in the right direction there. You're welcome here anytime, any Thursday or Friday. I'm sorry, any Friday or Saturday night. You are welcome to call in here.
Sure.
And
well, here's how you can help
us
as an individual, and the folks that are listening can really help. You know, contact Dave, contact me on Missouri Liberty Amendments Project if you want to go and message me there, or you know, I'll give you my email. It's out there. But my point is let me know if there's an organization there in your community. Doesn't have to be a large one. It can be, you know, any organization that's interested in this topic. They want to learn more about it, and just message me, email Dave or myself, and I'll be glad to schedule a time to come across Missouri. I've traveled from St. Joe to Joplin to, you know, St. Louis. It doesn't matter. We're in this for the long haul because we think that the states started off sovereign and we've lost our way. We don't understand what it really means to be the United States. And I don't know what it's going to take. I have to say to folks, I watch the news a little differently than I used to. And when my friends say, you know, well, look what the president's doing, look what's happening here, look what's happening there, and I say, well, that's a good thing. And they say, how can you say it's good? I said, well, is your neighbor awake yet?
Yep.
No. Okay, well, maybe we need some more of just that same thing. I know it doesn't sound good, but it's going to continue to happen until people wake up. And anybody that can do math can sit down and look at what your 2 and 3 and 4 and 10-year-olds are facing in their lifetime as far as the debt that we're racked up. And folks are just throwing their hands up. I don't know the solution. Well, if there's anything this country needs, it's for a group of respected men and women selected by each state for their knowledge of the Constitution, fairness, character, and devotion to states' rights. If there's anything this country needs, it's for a group like that to get in a room and have a meeting.
Yes.
And decide whether, you know, what they can do to propose real solutions to restrict the jurisdiction and power of the United States government. The federal government is out of control, and the runaway is ongoing.
You're absolutely right. Every day the Constitution is being amended, it just absolutely amazes me. I don't get the people who so fear this Constitutional Convention, because they fear the amendment process, or they fear a constitutional rewrite, or they fear all kinds of things that can't or won't likely happen, when right under their noses the Constitution is being amended, changed, literally torn apart every day by judges, by lawmakers, by government agencies, by bureaucratic sidearms of the federal government. It just amazes me that people don't get it.
Well, you know, we tell our kids that scholarship matters. You know, we tell them to do their homework, you know, turn the TV off and do your homework, pay attention to things that matter. You know, responsible and informed parents, they even foster success. You know, they demand their children apply themselves. And knowing the difference between truth and fiction is scholarship. It's important. And it goes without saying that poor scholarship is a recipe, you know, for ignorance, failure, misconception. So, you know, we tell our children that it's important, but on this issue, we need to do our homework. Because when we do, we're going to find out that those who wrote the Constitution believed it was essential for this document to be able to be amended.
Right.
I mean, they've started on the very beginning when they met. They said, we've got to have a way for this document to be amended. And so they set out and designed a system. And I was really amazed that they started off to begin with that the states had the exclusive ability to initiate the amending process.
Right.
And somehow in the middle of all that, it got flipped around. So when it came in there, that's part of that story that's really interesting. But when they started this process, they meant for the states to be able to initiate amendments, and it's actually kind of a fluke in terms of how it turned out that Congress has the ability to propose amendments, because when they started, they meant for the states to have that power.
You're absolutely right. And when it came back, when the draft came back, on the last waning days of the convention, and was being read, it turned out that the wording had been changed so that at that point only the federal legislature had the power to propose amendments. The states were totally left out. The states could beg the federal legislature for an amendment, but the Congress still controlled the process. The Congress could ignore the states the way it was written out of the style committee. The Congress had all the power in the world. And it was George Mason who stood up on the next to the last day of the convention and raised so much hell that they finally amended Article 5 to exactly what you read today, giving the states once again the power around the Congress, the ownership, giving the states back owner. You know, if Article 5 had gone, and you know, you want to talk about a document that the states own, that is a compact between the states, where the states have ownership of the Constitution. That completely goes away if Article 5 is written the way it had been written coming out of the Style Committee. You could with that one paragraph in there, the way it was written, the day George Mason stood up and said, hey, something's wrong here, you can stop talking about the states having ownership of their own Constitution, because it just was, once that thing was cut loose the way it was written, it was out of their hands then.
And as I've pointed out a couple times, if you don't use Article 5, then it might as well not even be in there. If you're afraid of Article 5, you know, oh, I love the Constitution, but not that, you know, those. It's just like having a Constitution that doesn't have it. And I tell folks every day, that's not the Constitution that you swore an oath to uphold, and that's not the Constitution that people have died for. And so we need to get back to this idea that scholarship is important, and most people don't realize that these ideas that, you know, fiction and uncertainty of Article 5, you know, have now at this point been reduced to just commentaries, because we realize now as we go back and see who wrote those original, the initial first wave of scholarship on Article 5, there were people who absolutely did not want a convention to happen. So how you think they would describe it? They would describe it as an uncertain, runaway opportunity for chaos. Well, that's because they didn't want it to happen.
Right.
And so now we can look at, you know, the works since then enlist not only the records of the Constitution's drafting and ratification, but also pre-existing convention tradition in contemporaneous law. And there's another thing, that these materials are supplemented by case law and actual practice over the two centuries since the founding. We have a lot of cases. You know, folks say, oh, there's no case. No, there's lots of case law in Article 5. And so it just depends on kind of, and I have told people fairly recently, there's one lady that I talked to, and I respect her for, she's a conservative, she's worked hard, but she just is afraid of this issue. And when I say, I try to get her to understand that this is just a committee meeting with no power to do anything except make proposals, she says, you're out of your mind. Well, show me where it says it's something more than that. It's a meeting.
Yep.
And these folks can make proposals, but you know the process itself is the safeguard.
Right.
So, hey, I don't want to get off too long, but I put a post on Missouri Grassroots Coalition also about the Second Amendment Preservation Act. I don't know if you've discussed that last night or at all this week, but there's a post on there, and it's going to conference, as many of people know. That's House Bill 1439. And anyway, I had an email from Ron Calzone. I just wanted to forward that information and post it on there. There's a group of folks who need an email, and
Well, let's take a minute to talk about that. I mean, we did talk about that a little bit last night. I was in receipt of Ron's letter as well myself today. I did my part. I emailed all the members of the conference committee and sent a special – it happens that my own senator is on that committee, so I sent a special little paragraph to him in his particular copy. But, yeah, if you want to go ahead and talk about that, let's go ahead and talk about that.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that folks mentioned it. It's on there. I just passed that on because I wanted to make sure that people get an opportunity to. I guess the other thing that goes with Convention of States that I want folks to know about is that there is a meeting. We know about, a lot of folks refer to the Mount Vernon Assembly.
Right.
It's a meeting that happened in December. We know that Mike went along with Senator Holzman from Missouri. And we have several people who've shown interest in going. We know that any sitting legislator from any state actually can attend. Those that are appointed by the leadership are ones that can vote. But that's coming up, and it's in, I believe, June 12th, or it's in mid June. It's going to be in Indianapolis. It could be the 14th, I believe. When I say mid-June, that's pretty close. But that's going to be in Indianapolis. And they're really stressing this idea to try to make this as bipartisan as possible. You know, we all realize that if anything is going to come out of the still at the end, when you hold your cup out and something's going to drop out of this whole process, it's going to have to be bipartisan. It's just not going to happen if it's not bipartisan. So that's a little scary for some of us, but we can do the math, and we know that it's going to have to be needed. It's going to have to be common sense, and it's going to have to be something to get the votes. Otherwise, it can be ratified. Otherwise, you know, we're all wasting our time.
Exactly. Yeah, and you're exactly right. You're exactly right again, Keith. We and you folks out there who are listening, now you're either conservative or libertarian. I doubt my liberal friends are spending their Saturday night here with us tonight. And yet, hold your breath. I do have a lot of liberal friends. But you conservatives and libertarians, when you start talking to progressives or Democrats, and along with what Keith just said, this is going to be a bipartisan process. Steer them into, or lead them to, or wait until they start talking about some of the atrocities come out of Washington D.C., like the Defense of Marriage Act, or the Terry Schiavo case, or the things like that get on their nerves, that gall them. About the way the federal government is riding roughshod over their lives as well. And at that point in time, just stop them and bring this idea up that it's time. It is time to get together and do something to restrict the power of this governing body.
Well, that's why I like to talk about the state repeal amendment every time I get an opportunity, because that's something that gets their attention. It may not right off the bat, but when you ask them the question that Lloyd Sloan likes to ask, you know, who gets to decide? Now, Lloyd wasn't the first one that I heard say that. But Mark Meckler said the same thing when he was trying to, you know, he's had some experience in some pretty liberal circles, and he knows how to get their attention. Who gets to decide? And the state repeal amendment is and state sovereignty is something that, you know, it's not as, you know, if we don't figure out how to get this to be a bipartisan issue, you know, in Missouri, you know, I'm a little disappointed that we don't have a few. I guess I'm not surprised, but my point is if we don't figure out how to approach this and get the votes that we need down the final stretch, then if we don't figure out before we get there how to get those votes, we're not going to get them when we get there. It's just not
going to happen. That's right. Because we already know, folks, we have a governor who can take care of the Republican majority in a hurry if he wants to. So, you know, the fact that we have a Republican majority should be nothing that makes us rest at ease. What's the second oar? I mean, we've talked a little bit about the grassroots oar and how we keep it alive through the summer and into the next session.
I would just return, the second oar is just in the legislature itself. And okay. I will have to say that, you know, we didn't have a fast start out on the grassroots. We started, it's not been that long ago in terms of number of days that we started, you know, day one hasn't been that many days ago in Missouri as far as working in the grassroots, as far as getting, trying to get interest in this particular topic. But I have to just say that when we walked into the Capitol, you know, I want to give John Putnam the credit. Once again, he knew who to go talk to, and he knew, you know, nobody had to show him where the rooms were or who was there and who to talk to. But we spent 2 days at the very beginning of this session talking to people, and that oar was ripe. I mean, that oar was in the water, and it was gaining some traction because the legislators that we talked to, and a lot of them are those sponsors, the first ones that you see who are sponsors on HCR 41, they're ready because they're tired of Missouri being an agency of the federal government.
Absolutely. And so what do we do now? Do we spend the summer rewriting, making sure we have titles and getting this thing pre-filed so that it's ready on day one? Do we start it in both houses at the same time and try to work it toward the middle? I mean, what do we do from here with oar number two?
I have an answer for that.
Okay. I figured you
we
did.
We talked to 100,000 people, and we ask every one of them to send $10 to Mike Moon.
We're on that, buddy.
And if you're not on Liberty Amendments Project, you know, you'll see it before very long, and you'll see it on the – And if you hear me in a program, you'll hear me tell me to get the paper out, and I'll have the address for you so you can know where to send that check.
Yep.
And we cannot let people who do the heavy lifting and the principled hard work in the legislature take a hit for it. We have got to have their back.
You're right.
It's that simple. We've got to have the people who are willing to put their name on the line. We've got to put ours right on there with them, or we will get the government that we deserve.
That's right. I say to everyone listening tonight, if Mike Moon ain't worth $10 to you, then you're in the wrong state. If Mike Moon isn't worth $10 to you, then you're in the wrong party. You're in the wrong place. You're in the wrong state. Because that's exactly what we're headed for now. Because of the impeachment, because of the COS, because of the anti-Common Core, the elite Republican Party has mounted a name recognition primary against Mike Moon, and that is the subject of the $1 million message. It's a message to these people that it's our state. It's not their state. If you're a Republican, the message is it's our party. It's not your party. If you're a Libertarian, it's our liberty. It's not your liberty. We run this show, folks, and that's what the $1 million message is all about. And you'll see more on that coming out this week. You'll hear more about it, and we're going to launch that baby next Thursday night at 7 o'clock, and we're going to run it for 2 weeks.
I just want to say something else and somebody, and you know, how to begin this maybe, but I want to say a special thanks to Ron Calzone because he came to the, and he's been, and there's, and the reason I bring Ron up is there are some folks out there, not in large number, but I've heard this several times, and I've been able to trace it pretty well back to the same person. But if there's anybody out there that feels the same way, you know, this issue, the Convention of States, it's going to divide the Republican Party. Well, first of all, we're grown-ups, and I've seen, I just want to thank Ron because of the way that, even though maybe Ron and I may not see things exactly the same way, there's enormous respect there. And he's had some things to say, but he's done it in such a professional and really just a there's a couple other words there, and they escaped me, but really gracious, I think, is a fairly gracious way. He really wasn't for this issue, but he came in and just made the statement and showed where, you know, on the witness form, 73% of the people on his list were in favor of this. Now, he didn't have to come in and report that, but he's just a class act, and so I want to thank him for the way. And for people who think this issue is going to destroy the Republican Party, our country's bigger than the Republican Party, and the future of our children is more important than, you know, a party. But when we're grown ups and we do it in a professional way, and we don't. There's some folks out there. There's a particular organization. We don't see things eye to eye on this issue, but we are not going to be found defacing or. You know, we're going to have nothing but kind words for them because they've been fighting a lot of the battles that we agree on longer than I've been alive. So I have enormous respect for those folks, but everybody's entitled to be wrong once. That's what I say.
I piggyback on that. Ron and I went around and around last session about the SAPA even. Specifically, I'm not sure he's forgiven me, but I never, ever, ever held anything against Ron Calzone. He is, as you say, a class act. He works tirelessly for these causes, and he is a gem.
I posted earlier. It's called Politician Lawyers and Cowards, but it's a summary. And it was a well done summary, I believe, on what happened with the impeachment process, all three of those bills. And I want to thank it came from Ed Emery's staff. I think I know the young lady that wrote it. She did a marvelous job. But it showed that, obviously, once again, in that hearing, who was there doing the heavy lifting? Ron Calzone.
We got a call.
760 witness forms, you know, and brought those in, and you know that's. He's doing an admirable job, and he was concerned, you know, that this issue, Convention of States, might in some way diminish some of the gains that conservatives have made in terms of working together, and I don't think it has. I think, if anything, a conversation about the Constitution, a conversation about state sovereignty, you know, the more we talk about it, the more people become passionate about it, the better off Missouri will be. I feel that. I feel that way strongly.
Okay, I'm back. I'm sorry to have left you. We had a caller there I was trying to get a hold of. They're not coming through, and so we'll give them a chance to fix whatever their technical glitch is, and we'll try again.
You think that was a little strong? Politicians, lawyers, and cowards?
Nope, that's pretty darn good in my mind.
I had to think that over, and I thought, well, you know, that's just nothing else but that, and
hello?
Especially after that was before I went and I heard last night's program and listened to last night's program, what Mike had to say, and that's just absolutely.
Hello.
You're absolutely right. Hello caller. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm sorry. I'm just wondering. I'm calling from my Bluetooth. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who are you?
All right. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Hello. You're on the air, caller. Oh, well, okay.
Testing.
He just wanted to call us to test his Bluetooth out, I guess. That's all there was to that. Okay, Keith. No, yeah, that was a heck of a show last night with Mike. I'm glad you had a chance to catch it. He was on several occasions, of course. Quite complimentary of you and your cause. He was a spearhead for the COS up there in the legislature. We'll be counting on him next year because we have every intention of seeing him up there again. I've enjoyed my conversations with Mike every Friday night. So this SAPA thing. Second Amendment Preservation Act for you folks. I don't want to just interject that then and leave you folks out there listening, who didn't who aren't in receipt of this notification from Ron hanging as to what's exactly going on. The Second Amendment Preservation Act was introduced by Representative Doug Funderburk, and in the Senate by Senator Brian Nevis, back early in the session again. It went through the same long, drawn-out process. We had hoped that, like the tax cut bill, we would be able to get that baby passed to the governor for his almost certain veto and back before the session ended so that we could do the veto override during the regular session instead of waiting for the special veto override session. That isn't going to happen. But right now, this last week, and I say that's not going to happen because even if it passes out of the conference committee the way it should, and we'll get into that in just a second, and then goes to the governor's desk, the governor has sufficient number of days to sign or repeal that he is going to be able to stall that baby out until the session ends. I think we have our same Bluetooth caller back. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Who is this? Okay, then we, so anyway, the Second Amendment Preservation Act came out of the House of Representatives stripped of virtually any enforcement mechanism. And by enforcement mechanism, I said basically it came out of the House of Representatives saying, oh, please, federal government, don't come down here and try to do anything to us. But if you do, we're not going to do anything to you. It went over to the Senate, and the Senate reinserted a somewhat – when it was introduced in the House, there was a specific criminal violation for any federal officer who came down and attempted to enforce on Missourians federal laws in contradiction to Missouri rights and recognized freedoms for Missouri citizens. That got stripped out in the House of Representatives. It went to the Senate completely neutered. And it got to the Senate, and the Senate, as I say, the handler there was Senator Nevis. The Senate went and added back in a somewhat modified enforcement mechanism that basically says any federal agent or anyone acting as an agent of the federal government who attempts to enforce federal laws on Missouri citizens in violation of the rights protected and guaranteed by the Missouri Constitution to Missouri citizens can never hold in the state of Missouri any kind of law enforcement office.
You said federal, but yeah, it's state. So state officials attempting to enforce, right?
Right. And that, or federal officials.
Thought that was actually, was better. Better than it was initially, so they put that back in.
So where the thing sits now, and wait a minute, caller, we'll get to you. Where the thing sits now is in a conference committee, and that's what happens when a bill goes from one house to the other and comes back different than it went there. It's in a conference committee designed to try to work out the differences, and there are some members in both chambers who would like to strip that enforcement language out of there. There is a call to action on most of the grassroots websites. I know there's one on Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I think there's probably one on your site, isn't there, Keith, where there is a list of email addresses for the members of this committee, this select conference committee. And you need to get a hold of them and let them know that it's your desire and the desire of Missouri for that enforcement phraseology to stay in there. And just use simple words with these guys, like, hey, pass that thing exactly the way it sits on the table in front of you now, okay?
Well, they need to ask them to vote no on the conference committee report, first of all, and pass this bill as HB 1439 with the ineligibility clause in it, just as it was passed by the Senate. They don't want it. Oh. They don't. We don't want that torn out of there. We want it in there.
Well, that's new to me. I wasn't sure that the conference committee bill was actually on paper yet, having stripped that out. I thought that the conference committee was in the process of deciding now, and I may be wrong, whether that was going to stand or fall. Let's see who this caller is. Maybe they're into this. This is Dave.
Paul,
Okay. So that was my understanding, Keith, and I could be wrong.
Oh, I was just reading that. That was that's an email of this afternoon, 1:14, and I just read it right out of there. In other words, please send them each an email. That's these folks that are listed on the Missouri Grassroots website. Facebook page. I will say Facebook page. It's not on your site. Asking them to vote no on the conference committee report and pass HB 1439 with the ineligibility clause in it.
Okay.
Just it was passed by the Senate. Yeah.
All right. That's then you are right. The conference committee report has evidently been done, and the conference committee report evidently is proposed to the conference committee.
Well, that's the ineligibility clause. That's the one you were talking about a minute ago,
right.
I understand it right.
That's
and
exactly
it's the most
right.
important enforcement provision in the bill. So,
it is.
And I think one thing you can say about our legislators, they talk tough, but they'll pass legislation, and then at the last minute, they'll take the teeth out of it. You know, how many times have you seen that happen? They'll take the teeth. And so, and you could say the same about this impeachment. They talk tough, and they tell Michael, we'll support you, but when it comes right down to it, they don't have ice water in their veins. I'm not going to say what's in their veins, but it's not, you know, they're just not willing to take it all the way on some of these issues and put their name on it and, you know, stand tall.
Right. You're absolutely right. Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to wrap I don't want to say wrap up. We're going to keep Keith here as long as he wants to stay, but we're going to wrap up on this Convention of the States things, and we're going to move on to a couple of the other things we were going to talk about tonight. Are you going to hang with us through the break, Keith? Did you go to Liberty Talk or Freedom Talks today?
No, I didn't. In fact, I was in St. Peter's, and I was on the other end of the state. And I went to the one in Springfield. Of course, you remember that.
And, I
do. I just want to say, folks, if you haven't been to one of those, you can go and see it on their website or on their Facebook page and see what their schedule is. But if I was impressed, and the overall message was, you know, it's the message that that we all need to be telling our congressmen. I learned a lot, you know, that we need to send people to Jefferson City and to Washington so that they know that the only purpose of government, the only purpose we send people to Jefferson City is to protect our liberty. There is no other reason to have government other than protect the liberty of citizens.
Yeah, that was the inaugural one that you and I went to here in Springfield, the very first one they had. And I was sitting here talking with Lloyd last week about the upcoming one in St. Peter's, which was done more as a panel discussion rather than each guy having a turn to stand up there for a given amount of time. I was reviewing the notes. I frantically took notes during the Freedom Talks meeting, and one of the very first things that I wrote, in fact, the second thing that I wrote, so very close to the first thing, was this thing is going to evolve into something different and more palatable. Not that I found it impalatable. It was very, very interesting, but I can see them working it and making it better every time they present it. I am really hoping they have another one scheduled on the western side of the state here so that I can go and see how it's evolved.
And if folks don't know who we're talking about, obviously we're talking about former Senator Jim Lemke and Missouri Representative Paul Kirkman. I don't know who all the other, they have had some different guests but as I noticed, as I look at their website, looks like the one that we're going to have in Washington, Missouri, is going to be July 12th at 10 o'clock
right.
in the Freedom Center. So they're they're going to have another one coming up.
Yep. And Lloyd. Lloyd, of course, goes to all those to push the SRA and again, all about all of it about state sovereignty and the sovereignty of the individual and who owns the economy, who owns the government, who owns the United States of America. We'll be right back.
To Cold Climb, come springtime, so let me hear you say, my love, I'm gonna stand my ground. They rise to me, I'll blow them down. I am gonna stand my ground.
You better not doubt me, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You see the lambs in the ghetto who worship their Geppetto, believing it never seems the strings they think bind them. So we write to our congressmen with bleeding pins of the sorrow within and pretend they just send tickets to the latest Tom Hanks show.
All right, here we are. We're back with Keith Carmichael. Keith is the director of the Missouri Convention of States Project, and he's traveled all over the state. He continues to travel all over the state educating, convincing people about the Convention of the States. He's worked tirelessly with Mike Moon to get the legislation going. And he's a friend of ours, a friend of yours. Keith, are you going to stay with us for a little while, or do you need to go?
Oh, I can. I just have a couple more minutes, but I have to say I really enjoy calling in because, you know, especially nobody tells me you're exactly right, like you do, Dave. I'm very rarely exactly right on anything, but it's certainly an issue that I'm passionate about, and when I give a presentation, I start it off with a slide of my kids, and I tell people this is why I'm here, and you know, and really, if this is so far gone that we can't fix it, then we just need to quit kidding ourselves and go ahead and go fishing and just you know, just hunker in and wait for the end. But I'm not buying that.
I'll tell you what. Speaking of that, in your last couple of minutes, and then I do want to wrap up by you giving people the email address they can get a hold of you to talk to their group, and directing people once more to Convention of the States website and the Missouri Liberty Amendments Project website. But I want to hear one more time. I mean, we hear people talking about the doomsday that is going to come in this country when we go much farther beyond this point. When we start talking about things like secession, and when we start talking about things like very much more federal overreach, about the blood that's going to be spilt in the streets. Tell us one more time the story about General Davis.
Well, you know, I it's just a slide that I'll have to tell you where this, first of all, you can find this. And anybody that's interested in this topic at all needs to own a copy of Constitutional Brinkmanship by Russell L. Kaplan, C-A-P-L-A-N. And, you know, it's $5, Dave. And if you really care enough about this topic, you can go on Amazon. The freight costs as much as the book does if you go to where you can buy it used. But you flip back there towards the back, and I found this quote where Jefferson Davis, in his memoirs, regretted that in earlier and better times, when the prospect of serious difficulties first arose, a convention of states was not assembled. He wrote that in what's called The Rise and Fall of the Confederate Government. He wrote it in 1881. It's on page 191 of that document. And I just took a picture of Jefferson Davis, and I've got him overlooking a Confederate cemetery. And I use it from time to time to remind me that our framers had just come through 8 years of a bloody battle in which they lost over and over and over again. You know, somebody may ask me, you know, Keith, are you discouraged about, you know, the way the Convention of States has gone in Missouri? I said, no, I'm really encouraged. I'm looking at the people that are paying attention and the way they're fighting. You know, we just started just weeks ago, and we came a long ways, but we didn't get where we wanted to be. But just remember how many times in the Revolution that those men fought and lost, and they lost, and they lost, but they never quit. Well, Jefferson Davis said, you know, he regretted that a convention of states was not assembled. And I think what he's really admitting there in black and white is that had it been done correctly and early enough, perhaps a lot of people wouldn't have had to die.
You're
can't hardly
right.
go to a community in the South, across the Midwest, anywhere, and not find a small cemetery or a small monument to those men who just couldn't agree and decided that violence was the only answer. I hope we never go there. I hope we never do.
It was foreseen, Keith, by the founders. The founders in great numbers, in numbers of majority, were opposed to slavery. The founders, in numbers of majority, did not want to enshrine slavery into the United States Constitution. They did not want a fugitive slave clause. They did recognize that there would be no Confederacy. There would be no 13 states in a United States of America unless they did something to take care of, to appease, to bring on board the southern states.
They really
Thomas,
worked very hard at it. And I read a book very recently, and I encourage everybody to, it's a small book and it's not inexpensive. It's The History of America in Black and White by David Barton. And David Barton is one that can unearth some of the stories that you just can't believe about our early American history, especially how Americans treated their black brothers and sisters, and they treated them as neighbors. They fought together if you take the picture of George Washington crossing the Delaware, that famous picture, there's two black gentlemen in that boat that's been forgotten. But in that book, one of the few places that's described how hard and how much trouble our framers went to try to do away with slavery, but they were not going to have a union without those southern colonies. And I've been
that's
places
right.
where people talk about, you know, the fraction that came up with in terms of voting and those and really what they were doing is they were trying to put as much pressure as possible on those southern colonies to free those people.
Thomas Jefferson foresaw slavery being a war issue. Thomas Jefferson foresaw the bloody war between the states that was going to occur over slavery. Now, the founding fathers, in an effort, and I'm not ever going to contend that this was an issue that brought George Mason to his feet, but the founding fathers knew that this nation would eventually outgrow a need for slavery. And they introduced in the Constitution a method that would easily have alleviated the problem. And I think it timely at this point in history to reflect on Jefferson Davis's story there once more. Standing over the graves of those Confederate and Union soldiers, saying, if only we'd called a convention of the states before this thing got out of hand. And
there's some folks who are a lot brilliant in history, and our friend Lloyd Sloan is one of those people, and he says, and I have to agree with him, that issue was so difficult and so ingrained, and so there may not have been any other way than the way it ended up happening. But you know, it's what Jefferson Davis is admitting there is that's a process that they should have given a chance.
Right.
And we know that in 1861 there was a convention called, it's not an Article 5 convention, but a group of states did get together and then proposed a solution to Congress. And of course, Congress was deadlocked and sat there and did absolutely nothing, maybe nothing they could do. But it was too little and too late. But I think what he's saying in 1881, as he looks back on those years, is that, you know, we should have listened a little closer to the framers. And that's what I encourage people to do on this issue. When it comes right down to it, you know, there's folks who know this issue. They know there's a lot of folks who know a lot more about this than I do. But I encourage everybody to do their homework, study as much as you can on this issue, because the framers put it in the Constitution for a reason. And I urge folks, you know, if we come down to it, we need to, a last resort. It shouldn't be the last resort. We need to trust the framers of this marvelous document one more time.
Do not let that be your grandkids standing there, as Jefferson Davis did, saying, if only they'd listened to Grandpa Keith and called a convention of the states, we wouldn't be standing over these graves right now. Don't let it happen. Keith, how do people get a hold of you if they want you to come and talk to their group, if they want you to communicate with them, if they need to just talk about it?
Sure. Well, coalitions.missouri. Coalitions with an S dot M-O, I said Missouri, but it's M-O, at selfgovern.com. One more time, coalitions.M-O at selfgovern, selfgovern.com. That's my official email, but you can message me on Facebook, Missouri Liberty Amendments Project. You'll probably have to put all four words in there for it to come up until you've used it a time or two. Missouri Liberty Amendments Project. But I would come on there if you can and like it so you'll get those posts and keep you up to date with what's going on. And please go to conventionofstates.com. That's the main website. We call it COS for short, conventionofstates.com. And there's news there of what's happening nationwide. There's a map, just a lot of information. It's brand new, really, in many ways, with the information that's there. There's things happening every week, and if you're not up to date, for example, just a couple of weeks ago we had, you know, Alan West and Sarah Palin the same week both called for a convention of states. Sarah Palin saying we need to look for legislators who are willing to call for a convention of states. They're recognizing that. Another article that came out, former congressman from Colorado, you know, said, I've been wrong. I've changed my mind. I've always looked at this with uncertainty. And of course, a lot of folks will know, but Tom Coburn, senior senator from Oklahoma, has said that he's going back home early. No, not because he's sick. He said, you didn't read it close enough. I've got something more important to do. I'm going to go work on convention of states. He thinks in Washington, you can never fix itself, and the solutions are not going to come from the Beltway. So there's a lot of information there, and encourage folks to go there. Once again, conventionofstates.com.
Okay, Keith, thanks again. We always love to have you. Again, I reiterate, you're welcome anytime. Call any night that we're here. Tell us where we're at. Tell us where we need to be. Tell us what we need to do. And keep us posted on how things are going. I'll stay in touch with you. You do the same. And we appreciate everything that you're doing out there, doing all the hard work and keeping this thing moving.
Well, I sure appreciate the way you treat me here in Missouri Grassroots Radio, and anytime I can be, we'll just be on there. Every opportunity I come, I'll give you a call. But Dave, thank you so much, and have a great evening tonight.
And I want to say one more thing before you go, Keith. You're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you one more thing I'm absolutely right about. On May 5th, wait a minute, what's today? Wait a minute.
About the 10th.
May 5th, there was a when is this? There's going to be a debate between Michael Ferris and Andy Schaffley. You know, Phyllis Schlafly.
Yes.
Well, her son Michael. There is going to be debating Michael Ferris in New Jersey.
Her son Andy.
And
her son's name Andy. Yeah.
That's 3 days away. It's on the 13th, and it's going to happen in New Jersey. So I don't look for anybody to just get in a, you know, going to be travel up there, but they'll be online. It's going to be. You know, he said he was done with debates, as he debated numerous people who were just not courteous and not informed, and, you know, just were trying to, you know, really was belligerent in some cases. But he said the only person I will debate will be Andy Schaffler, you know, and he will in New Jersey in 3 days. So on the 13th,
cool.
So you'll be able to get that live and more about that on conventionofstates.com. Dave, thank you, and have a great evening.
Thank you, sir. Good night. Okay, so let's see here. I want to say, just piggybacking on what Keith's been talking about, the convention of the states, and we've talked this week a whole lot about the impeachment of Governor Nixon. We've talked about the Second Amendment Preservation Act. We've talked about the Anti-Common Core. We've talked about the Department of Education, the Missouri State Department of Education. We've talked about all kinds of things. And what it all boils down to is who owns the process. Now, I get chastised by many friends for this whole state sovereignty thing. But listen. I am not being sacrilegious when I say the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the United States of America does not belong to you and me. The Constitution of the United States does not belong to the people. It belongs to the states. It belongs to the 50 states and the 50 sovereign state governments. Now, let me go here before you go nuts, okay? We hear a lot from our friends about this is not a proper function of government. That is a proper function of government. What is the function of government? This isn't the function of government. Function of government. Function of government. Function of government. And we hear from people that the state isn't supreme. The federal government isn't supreme. The state of Missouri isn't supreme. The individual is sovereign. The individual is supreme. And what they've done is they've been brought up, these folks have been brought up for so long in the system that is turned upside down that they don't get it. And here it goes. Here it goes. Yes. In the United States of America, the individual is the supreme power. We need a government, though, and we define the function of that government. We define the function of government in the state constitution. So the function of government, the proper quote-unquote function of government, as it applies to us, the sovereign individual, is defined by us, the sovereign people, in our state constitution. And within the powers of the state constitution and the function of the government, as you and I, Missourians, have defined it, the state is sovereign. So what is the function of the federal government? And how is that function defined? You know, this isn't a function of government. That isn't a function of government. Something is, else is or isn't a function of government isn't something that comes out of Webster's Dictionary or out of the Encyclopedia Britannica. You don't just open a book and say, tell me what is the function of government. The function of the Missouri state government is what you and I say it is. The function of the federal government, a cooperative of the 50 states, is what the 50 states say it is. Now, that keeps you sovereign, but indirectly sovereign in this line of being able to tell the federal government what its function and power is and isn't. So imagine the pyramid that you are at the top of. Not the other way around. You, the sovereign individual, join with several million other sovereign individuals who call themselves Missourians, and you define the function of government. And then 50 like states get together, and they decide there are some things that independent states can't do that have to be done jointly and together. And there needs to be a sovereign authority to do those things, controlled by those 50 states. And so they design a federal government, and they decide what its function is. That's what's screwed up now. That's what all of these things we've been talking about this last legislative session are about. The Second Amendment Preservation Act is about exactly that pyramid we just discussed. Common Core is exactly about that pyramid we just discussed. All of those things that our legislature is doing to try to protect us from the federal government, all of those things that our legislature, thank you, Stanley Cox, is not doing to help protect us from that federal government, they have to do with this same pyramid. That's what state sovereignty is all about. You and I, we own this state constitution. You and I, we own the function of government. We define the function of government. We can change the state constitution. You and I can't change the federal constitution. The legislature of 38 states can change the federal constitution, but you and I can't. You and I can, do you do understand, right, that the Missouri legislature can't make an amendment to the Constitution of the state of Missouri? Only you and I can do that. They can propose an amendment. We can propose an amendment. Do you do realize that every 10 years you decide whether there will be a convention within the state of Missouri to propose amendments to the people of the state of Missouri to our Constitution? It's mandated. You do realize that the Constitution of the state of Missouri belongs to you and me. And we use it to define the function of government. When that's not working, we redefine the function of government. So the function of the federal government has to be defined. And the federal government, as a cooperative of the 50 states, has a function defined by the states. The states own the federal constitution. They own the federal government. That's what the convention of the states is all about. Really, if you are opposed to a convention of the states, you are saying the states don't own the Constitution. You are suggesting openly that the states don't own the federal government, that the federal government does not serve at the will of the people. You know, what? Here's a term we hear bandied about as well. It becomes a catchphrase for rallies: consent of the governed. That is your state constitution. That is a constitution that you form where you consent to be governed to a certain degree by the sovereign state of Missouri. Somewhere in the last 2 weeks, that whole thing went completely awry. Somewhere in the last 2 weeks, on the most important piece of legislation to be considered in the Missouri State House of Representatives, that whole thing went completely awry. Somewhere, something really bad happened. And only you and me can make it right. We're going to talk about the million-dollar message when we come back right after this short break.
Free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
We have one lonely guest left in the chat room. There's still an endless line of people listening in. The studio line's 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. I kind of held calls off as much as I could while Keith was talking. Our time is short. If you want to get in on this, 347-677-1835. If you want to join our one lonely guest in the chat room, go to blogtalkradio.com/Missouri Grassroots Radio and click on the chat button. I'm going to be back next week, one extra night, and the night after that, or the week after that, one extra night. I'm going to be back Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, rather than just Friday and Saturday. It's all about this thing we were talking about before the break. Stanley Cox is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Stanley Cox committee was in late receipt of the three articles of impeachment against the governor. Now, let me just for the sake of time, talk about the one article of impeachment that is egregious, that is an egregious behavior by the governor of the state of Missouri. The governor of the state of Missouri is constitutionally required to call a special election, to issue a writ of election, anytime there's a vacancy in the House of Representatives or the Senate. Statutorily, that constitutional requirement says he has to do that without delay. There are people in the state of Missouri, there are over a quarter million people in the state of Missouri that have no representation in Jefferson City. That seat is empty. There are people in the state of Missouri whose representative's seat has been empty for a year now, and who, before there is an election possible, will have had that seat empty for well over a year. The governor has flaunted his responsibility and openly spat in the face of those people who are not represented. An article of impeachment was drawn up against the governor for this. It had a late hearing in the House Judiciary Committee, and it went to that committee where it should have had a vote, should have had a vote of due pass, and been sent out to the House floor. But it absolutely demanded a vote one way or the other. Stanley Cox, the chairman of that committee, citing the majority opinion of his committee alone as the sole source, decided not to even have a vote on that, decided to just let that thing go, let it die in the committee, and never, ever, ever come out to the House for a vote. He specifically stated that the members of his committee agreed that the governor had acted illegally, that the governor had acted unconstitutionally by leaving 280,000 Missourians totally absent of voice in the seat of power. By leaving 280,000 sovereign Missouri citizens absent of voice in the seat of power, he had acted somewhat egregiously. But it was the opinion of his committee that that didn't rise to the level of impeachment. In the opinion of his committee, Representative Elmer, in the opinion of his committee, Representative Corneo, in the opinion, according to Cox, of people like Representative Haar, Representative Higdon, Representative Lira, Representative Marshall, and Representative Richardson, in his opinion, you believed it didn't rise to the level of impeachment. And so they weren't even going to vote on it in the committee. They weren't even going to vote yes or no to send this thing to the full House of Representatives. Now, that is the height of arrogance. Senator or Representative Cox believes that it is in his political best interest not to do that. See, he's got a race to win. See, he's got a race to win in Sedalia. See, the governor's going to come to Sedalia this summer and have a little pancake breakfast. And see, he might not want to piss the governor off before he heads out there for the pancake breakfast, right? Meanwhile, I hear nothing but silence from Elmer, Corneo, Haar, Higdon, Lira, Marshall, and Richardson. Have you heard them stand up and say, what the hell are you talking about? Have you heard any one of them go to the press and say, I don't know what he's talking about. It was certainly not our opinion that this didn't rise to the level of impeachment, that this disenfranchisement of over a quarter million Missouri people doesn't rise to the level of impeachment. But alas, we can't send a message to those folks because they don't have any primary opponents, or they're not coming back anyway. But listen, this guy, Stanley Cox, this guy who doesn't want to piss off the governor, this guy who lacks the integrity to even bring this issue up to a vote, is seeking another position. Can you believe this? This guy, with the integrity of a tree frog, wants to sit in a judge's seat. Wants to sit in a circuit, in an associate circuit judge's seat. It is time to say no, brothers and sisters. It is time to say, you do this to us at a political price. Is that message worth 10 bucks? Stanley Cox has a primary opponent. It is Pettis County Prosecutor Jeff Middlehausen. We'll be talking about him on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll be asking you to send the message loud and clear. We reject you, Stanley Cox. We reject your ethics. We reject your morality in our government. We reject your integrity. We reject you. 100,000 people, $10 each. We want a $1 million message to Stanley Cox in the form of support for his primary opponent in Pettis County. And then we want another $10. We want $20 from you. We talked with him last night. We talked to the guy, to a guy. I don't want to say the guy. There's lots of the guys up there. We talked to a guy last night, Mike Moon, who's carried the water for us, who introduced Anti-Common Core, who laid his name on the line in the Nixon impeachment hearings, who said in the Nixon impeachment hearings, well, hell yes, if Roy or if Matt Blunt had done the same thing, I would be voting to impeach him too. This isn't about party politics. This is about right and wrong and the representation by Missouri citizens in Jefferson City. That's what this is about. It's not about Matt Blunt, Jay Nixon. It's about right and wrong. And because Mike Moon is what he is, the fundamentalists of the Republican Party have mounted a primary campaign against a sitting Missouri representative, against a sitting Missouri representative who represents his people, against a sitting Missouri representative who went to bat with the Department of Natural Resources for his constituents, who went to bat with the Environmental Protection Agency for his constituents. Didn't go to get him money. Went to bat to keep the government from tromping all over them. Yeah, we're going to ask for $10 to be sent to Mike Moon to beat back this primary challenge from the people who should be on your side. To beat back a primary challenge mounted by Republicans who want dictatorial power over you. If you are a Republican, be prepared. Come prepared Thursday night to put your money where your mouth is when you say, this is our party, and we need to work to take it back. This needs to be a million-dollar message to the party elite. We own our party, not you. We are the Republicans. We are about limited government. We are about state sovereignty, not you. We are going to beat you back. Now, I'm telling you right now, if you've paid any attention at all to what's going on in the federal office primaries across this country, you know that at the federal level, we are not going to fix this problem. You know that the Tea Party at the federal level is not going to make it happen. We only make it happen by taking back our state to the point, by returning the state of Missouri to a point where our legislature is ready, willing, and able to stand up and say, we are the great state of Missouri, and you don't own us. We are the sovereign, show-me state, and you don't come here and tell us what to do. Here is the Constitution that we own, and it tells you all you can do. And anything other than that, you get out of our state, and you go hightailing it back to the Potomac River where you belong. And we will not fix this until we recognize that that's the only route. And when we recognize that's the only route, we will know that we need people like Mike Moon. And we need no people like Stanley Cox. So join us Thursday. Join us Friday, join us Saturday for the next 2 weeks as we send Stanley Cox, Mike Moon, and Missouri Republicans a million-dollar message. Thanks for being with us tonight. I love coming here. I love being with you folks. I love the sense of camaraderie that we all share. Even when we don't agree on everything. Brothers in smaller government, brothers in liberty.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we Where do I fit?